I wonder if you've had the experience of going on holiday for a week or two and having a lovely relaxing time and allowing all the cares of the world to fall away, finally relaxing, setting aside everything that you've been concerned about, and just getting into that nice relaxed state. And then sooner or later, of course, that holiday time comes to an end and you have to come back and you go into work on Monday morning and sit down at your computer and open up the email program, and there are those 300 emails sitting waiting for you to deal with them. Or you come into the office and your colleagues are bombarding you with all the things that you've missed. Or you come away from having a pool to send the kids off to just let them go and enjoy themselves, and come back and suddenly they want you to entertain them and keep them busy and provide them with food and snacks and this and that and the next thing, one after the other after the other. And suddenly reality comes crashing back in. All of the relaxation that you'd managed to achieve over those couple of weeks suddenly is no more. Reality comes crashing back. Well, I think maybe the disciples who'd been up the mountain with Jesus would have felt that and much more as they came down. They've been up there with Jesus and they've seen this transcendent experience. They've seen him transfigured before their eyes. They've seen the glory of God shining forth. Glorified humanity there for them to see. They've been reassured by Jesus. They've been told that they don't need to be afraid. And they've had this vision to keep them going. But sooner or later they have to come down the mountain. And here what they come down to is hardly encouraging, is it? They come down to meet their friends, the other disciples, and they discover that they've had quite a dramatic failure while they've been up on the mountain. They discover that they've been unable to heal this boy. I wonder what they must have been thinking. I wonder how they felt as reality came crashing back in. Well, as Matthew recounts the story here, he's quite brief in what had happened. He's quite brief in what Jesus said and did. And he seems to be using this healing really as a vehicle to get to the second half of what we read. It seems not so much to be about the fact that Jesus could heal the boy with this demon, this affliction, as about the fact that the disciples couldn't. The fact that they'd been unable to do it. And the reason Jesus gives is that they have so little faith. Verse 20. So he seems to be focusing in on this lack of faith, much more so than do Mark or Luke in their accounts of this. Matthew is quite tightly focused in on this is the issue, that they do not have the faith that they should. They don't have even the little faith of a mustard seed, the smallest seed that they knew about. They don't even have that much faith. And I wonder what these nine disciples had been trying. I wonder how they set about attempting to heal this boy. I mean, they've clearly made the attempt. Presumably, they've tried several times. I don't imagine that they did one thing, it didn't work, and they said, oh, well, never mind, and moved on. I imagine they've been at this for some time, but have completely and utterly failed to have any impact. Well, we don't know what they were trying, but we do know that it was not what it should have been. We do know that it was not faith in God that they were trying to exercise. Mark gives us a bit of an insight here in that the reason he records for why they couldn't drive out the demon is that this kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer, Jesus says. And at first sight, well, that sounds like two different answers, a lack of faith or a failure to pray. But of course they are one and the same thing, aren't they? What is prayer but a demonstration of faith, an exercise in reliance upon God? So whatever they've been doing, it's not humble prayer and dependence upon God. And I thought it would help us to reflect a little bit this evening on the kinds of things that we're inclined to try and replace faith with, perhaps some of the things that they were trying. And my first suggestion is that they perhaps were turning it into something of a magic trick. It's kind of becoming a little bit superstitious. I think this is probably the most likely candidate for what the disciples were doing. That they'd seen success in casting out demons before. They'd seen success in healing before. And they thought they had it down. They thought they knew what the solution was. And so they just did that again and assumed that everything would be fine. That they were capable of doing it. A guy called B.F. Skinner in 1947 did an experiment with a bunch of pigeons. He had a system whereby, I think it was every 20 seconds, a little hatch would open and the pigeons would have access to some food. And then the hatch would close again. And it repeated over and over again, opening and closing. And what he found was that the pigeons became superstitious. The pigeons thought that they could control what would open and close this hatch, as it continued to do so automatically. And so they had one pigeon who, when he was in the box with this hatch, he would spin around and around and around and around in circles, because it so happened that the first time that the hatch opened, he'd been spinning around, and therefore clearly that is what had caused the hatch to open. Another pigeon developed a sort of pendulum movement of his head, bobbing from side to side, for much the same reasons. And the more pigeons that they tried this with, the more they each developed their own behaviour of what they thought would cause the hatch to open. Of course, none of them had any control over it at all. It was entirely automatic on a simple timer. Well, pigeons have very small brains, of course. They would easily be taken in by this. Obviously, we would not be so foolish, would we? Certainly we can see it in the world around us, can't we? We can see all sorts of superstitious behaviour that we recognise as such. You know, you mustn't step on the cracks, you mustn't walk under a ladder. You see a black cat and recoil in terror, all these kinds of things. And perhaps we can look at those things and, you know, dismiss those so that we know better whether that's that we're, you know, we have enough scientific understanding to know that they're irrelevant, or whether it's that we have enough spiritual understanding to know that we shouldn't depend on such things. For whatever reason, I think we can set those aside. But I think actually we can very easily end up doing the same sort of thing in a more spiritual sense. We can even turn prayer into a kind of superstition, I think, whereby we do our thing and therefore the results happen. Now, of course, I'm not saying that there is no relationship between praying and things happening. Absolutely there is. This isn't like the pigeons in the box that had no real control. Prayer does matter. Prayer makes things happen when we pray in accordance with God's will. But if our attitude to prayer has got to the point of the minister who was speaking at a Christian Union meeting that I attended, who said, well, if nothing's happened, go and get two more people, pray again, and then God will answer. If our attitude to prayer has got to that point, then something has gone seriously wrong, hasn't it? We cannot say, do this, and therefore God will do exactly what you want. We can easily find ourselves thinking, oh, I didn't have a quiet time this morning, so it'll be a rubbish day. Or conversely, I've been serving God faithfully all this week, so I deserve something good today. I can expect good things to happen. Often we don't even allow these things to reach the level of conscious thought, because, well, we know that that's not how we should think. And yet, I think we often start to operate as if they were true. Now, of course, it is good to spend time with God every morning. And you probably will find that on average you have a better day if you have spent time with God in the morning. But we can't allow that kind of mechanistic association of A, therefore B. It is not that simple. We can't put God into a box. We can't think that we control what God will do. The disciples, if this is what they were doing, I think had slipped into idolatry, into thinking that they, into changing the nature of God, into thinking that they were in charge, that they controlled what God would do, that they themselves were able to cast out the demon by just doing their tick list of steps. So that's my first candidate, my first concern for how we might go about exercising faith in entirely the wrong way. The second possibility is related to that, is that we think we can do it ourselves. Now, probably the disciples didn't think that they, by their own power, could cast out a demon. But it certainly is a danger for us today that we think we can do things ourselves. It's the danger, perhaps, of competence. I mean, it's a very obvious danger, maybe, for ministers coming out of the Free Church College to think that we will be able to do it. You know, we've had some experience of preaching now. We've been and done our placements, so we know how to go and do pastoral visits with people. And, you know, we've sat under these faithful lecturers for 3 years, and therefore we've got it sorted. We know what we're doing. We are competent to go and do God's work. And of course, there's an extent to which you would hope that we are competent at that point, but not competent to do it ourselves. That's not the right way to think about it. If we lose the sense of dependence upon God, then you should be concerned. And I don't think it's only a danger for me in a year's time, or me now for that matter. I think it's just as much a danger for someone who's been leading the Sunday school for years, who, you know, you can pretty much do it now. You know how to do this stuff. You know how to help the children to have a good time. You know how to help them listen to a story. You know how to get them to give you the right answers about God, to not say God doesn't answer prayer. You know how to do it. You know how to help your friends. You know how to speak to people. To think that you know how to do it. I'm sure there are some of you who feel the exact opposite, who don't think you know how to do it at all. But I'm sure there are some who there is a danger that we believe too much in our own competence. Or if it's not our own competence, well then it's something else that we can control. It's the next program, the next Alpha course, the next Christianity Explored course, the next Bible study, the next. The magic box that will come and solve all our problems. The program that will get the people flooding back into church, that will transform everything. The next program. The new minister. Be very easy for the guys over in Glen Elg, wouldn't it, to think that when a minister comes, that will be the solution. That he will come and everything will be okay. Maybe there's some of you here think a new minister is the solution to your problems. Whatever it is, we know that that is not the solution, don't we? We know that it is not something that we ourselves control. Maybe there's a temptation to think that the solution is to go back to the way it used to be done. To the tried and tested ways, the old traditional ways, the ways that used to have this building full of people. The ways that used to have Christianity transforming the nation, that made this nation the people of the book, or whatever the proper phrasing is. I'm saying it, I'm not sure whether I'm saying it right at all. I should have checked that one. It's easy to look back on the past, isn't it? And of course there's a healthy way of doing that, but there's an unhealthy way of doing that too. If we think that as long as we copy exactly what happened then, everything will be okay now. As if we lived in the same society as they did then. As if people were the same as they were then. It is very easy for us to think in whatever way that we can do it ourselves. Either from our own confidence, our competence, or from the program, the system, the way of doing things. Two wrong ways. I have one more and then we'll get something a bit more positive. The third possibility, I guess is definitely not what the disciples were doing, but the third possibility is that we don't believe it's even possible. We never even try, because we have no confidence whatsoever that it could ever work. We end up thinking, don't we, that God can't do it, that, you know, that would never happen here, that would never work here, or that God wouldn't do it for me. You know, it might work for those people, but, you know, God wouldn't use me to bring someone else to faith. God wouldn't work through me like that because, well, you know, that's not me. I couldn't possibly do that. And that means that we think God can't do that. If we think he can't do it using me, that means we think God's not powerful enough to do it on his own, that he needs someone competent enough to help him do it. Of course, again, we know when we think about it more clearly, God has all the power, God is able to do it, he doesn't need us, and yet he chooses to use us, and he can use the weakest and most feeble of people to do it. And we look at the disciples, and that is so abundantly true, that he can use the weakest and most feeble of people to do it. We look back through history, and we see that it is true, that God can use weak and feeble men for his purposes. But we very easily forget what that means for us today as individuals. And we become more afraid of what people might say to us than we are confident in our sovereign God. So option three, we don't even bother trying because we don't even have that much faith to try. Well, that's all very negative, isn't it? But fortunately, there is a lot to be said much more positively about the nature of faith, about what Jesus commends here. As he says to them, I tell you the truth, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. So positively about faith. Well, I think we need to speak about the exclusivity of faith. We need to recognise that faith stands alone. Faith is in one thing alone. I was speaking this morning from Psalm 106, and the people come into the land and they just kind of accept and bring on board the practices of the people around them, and they end up trying to serve four different gods. And we look at them worshipping Yahweh on Sundays, well, Saturdays, I suppose, and Baal on Tuesdays, and we think, you know, you stupid Israelites, why would you do such a thing? And yet, we very easily end up doing the same thing ourselves. We do not put our faith in God alone. We do not put our faith in Jesus Christ alone. We function as if other things are also essential, as if our trust needs to be kind of spread around to have a nice broad base to be built upon. But we know that when Jesus speaks about faith, it is faith in him and him alone. He says in the following verses, the Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men, they will kill him, and on the third day he will be raised to life. That is the context in which he's talking about faith, as he heads to the cross, as he heads into Jerusalem, knowing what it will mean, knowing that that is the only way that their faith can have anything to be based upon. So an exclusive faith. Secondly, the manner of faith. The right way to have faith, the manner in which it should be. I was thinking about the difference between getting caught up in what God's doing or involving him in what I'm doing. Because faith in God, what we can easily do when we talk about that is to mean, I trust God will do what I want him to do. I trust that as I do this thing, God will make it work. I mean, you know, at the extreme end, you've got Creflo Dollar, who's believing in God and having faith in him that he will get a $65 million private jet. Now, I don't imagine many of you are having faith in God for that, but there might be the things that you think are good that you have faith in God for, there actually are not quite God's purposes. So we must be getting caught up in what he's doing, not just trying to co-opt him into what we want to do. It's like having faith in an aircraft. Faith in an aircraft means you trust it to get you to where the aircraft is going. You don't get to decide where the aircraft goes. You might decide which one to get on. But faith in an aircraft means you trust it will get you where it's already going. Faith in God means you trust he will go where he's going and he will accomplish his purposes. So it's not trusting only that God has the power to do it, it's trusting that he knows best what to do as well. The Lord's Prayer says, "Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." The manner of faith, caught up in what God is doing. Thirdly, the size of faith. As perhaps the most obvious point here, Jesus is talking about the size of faith. If you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there. I mean, the difference in scale between a mustard seed and a mountain is huge. And they're probably standing here at the foot of the mountain. You know, they can see it there. It's obvious. It's big. It's huge. And none of them think that anything could move that mountain. And Jesus says even the tiniest faith could do it. And I think the point he's making is that the size of your faith isn't really what matters. Because a tiny faith can do a massive thing. Because the issue is not the size of the faith, it's what the faith is in. It's where the faith is located. We don't need to have a great faith. A small faith is enough, as long as it's faith in the great God. Mark's account of this healing has the man bringing his son. He has him saying, "Lord, I believe, help my unbelief." It's obviously not a great faith. It's not a massive belief, but it's enough because it is in Jesus. So there's a danger that we think, oh well, I'm not good enough to do that. Or more piously, I don't have enough faith for that. I don't have enough faith to go and be a missionary. I don't have enough faith to go and tell my friends. You know, people say to you, oh, I wish I had your faith. And you say, you want to go, I'm sorry, what? It's not about having a big faith. It's about where the faith is located. If all you can pray is, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief, that's enough. God can work with that. God can use that. Because you're praying it to him. It brings us then to the power of faith. And I want you to just imagine what you could accomplish. Well, of course not what you could accomplish, but what God could accomplish. Now, we're not really interested in moving mountains around, are we? It doesn't seem all that helpful to us. I mean, you know, moving away from the road a bit so that it stops falling down onto the road, well, maybe that would be nice. But, you know, we don't really think that moving a mountain is useful, and I don't think Jesus is telling them that they should be casting big lumps of earth around. The point he's making is the magnitude of what is possible. Nothing will be impossible for you, he says to his disciples. Nothing for which they have been given the authority will be beyond their capabilities, will be beyond what God will do through them. And in contrast to that massive possibility, there is the incredible magnitude of what doesn't get accomplished. All of these reasons that we've thought about for the lack of faith, for faith wrongly exercised. Just how much is not accomplished for God's kingdom? Because we don't believe that God will empower us to do it. Because we do things in our strength, not in God's. Because we go about them in completely the wrong way. Because we go off on what we think is best, rather than getting on board with God's plan. And the question is, do you believe that God has the power to do it? And if you do, and if you have any faith at all in God, then go and do it. Whatever it is. If God is capable of achieving it, and you have faith in God, that means he can do it through you. So go and speak to the person at work. Just get on and do it. It only takes a little faith. Go and invite your friends to hear Alec McDonald next week. Go and invite your friend to church. Go on that mission trip that you've been considering but not quite getting around to signing up for because you're not really sure. Go and help out on one of the free church camps next year. Go and volunteer for the Sunday school rota. Go and get stuck in with the holiday club. Just go and do it. Because it doesn't matter whether you have the competence to do it or not. It doesn't matter whether you have the power to do it. It doesn't matter whether you have the skills for it or not. God does. Because if you have faith even as a mustard seed, you can move mountains. And believe it or not, moving a mountain is more difficult than having a chat with your friend at work. Let's pray.